supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Utah Jazz, 99-93. They're off until tomorrow when the Cavaliers pay a visit. Alabama ran all round Villanova, 77-55. College football, Temple's at Army at noon today. Penn State hosts Indiana, also at noon. And Villanova visits Delaware at 3:30. Michael Vick will miss tomorrow's game against the Redskins because of his concussion. Rookie Nick Foles gets his first NFL start. And the Philadelphia Marathon kicks off bright and early tomorrow morning at 7 at the Art Museum. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, ginger. We buy so many of those roots, actually they're rhizomes, at the grocery store and at Asian food markets. Many people wonder if they could grow their own. Well, the answer is yes, and it's remarkably easy. We'll tell you how to grow your own ginger when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, so we're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
How are you?
I am doing just fine today. How is Sarah?
Sarah is in Tennessee. We're having our normal Tennessee fall. Cold, rainy.
So what's up?
Well, I was wondering two questions. One about chrysanthemums, the other about rhubarb.
Okay.
The one about chrysanthemums is that, you know, in the fall, everybody goes to their local purveyor of mums and garden equipment, supplies, plants, etc., and gets gorgeous chrysanthemums that are nice and compact and tight. Anyway, when they're done, they are a perennial, and I know during the summer to keep them clipped off short until roughly the end of July in this neck of the woods anyway. And mine are done, and I've brought them in because of the unusually strange weather we've been having. And they have decided to start forming buds again.
Oh, how nice.
I was just wondering, with the mums, what exact light requirement, the number of hours per day, do they need to have?
Well, I mean, you don't have to worry about that. You've already got the buds reforming. Did you cut them back when you brought them in? Did you prune?
Yes.
Did you deadhead them?
I cut them back.
You say you brought them in. Were they always in pots?
Yes, they're in the same pots I bought them in, with the exception of a small one that I was lucky enough to get for like 98 cents
mm-hmm.
that is coming back with a vengeance.
Okay. And where are they in your house? Are they in a sunny window? Or
they are in the bathroom that has the energy saver light in it
mm-hmm.
and pretty really very good light.
Well, the bud formation is a good sign. If they don't get enough light, what's going to happen is that the flower stalks are going to become thin and long and leggy. That's really what sunlight does for plants. Yes, plants need a certain amount of sun to flower, but there's a lot of wiggle room in the middle. And if you're in that middle, you're going to get leggy plants. My advice to you would be to take them outside every day you can, every nice sunny day you have. If it doesn't get really cold that night, leave them outside. And then if you're going to get a snowstorm or an ice storm, or they're all beautifully formed and the flowers are beginning to open, then just bring them inside and put them on display.
Okay. Second question is rhubarb.
What about it?
It refuses to grow here in Tennessee.
Because you might not be cold enough.
Well, they've, you know, with the present-day climate changing the way it is, I've even tried, I have a small deep freeze, and I've, you know, even done the freeze bit.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that burdock root and burdock, the, quote, weed in general, burdock, carries a blight, it's a fungus down here, and that's what catches the rhubarb catches it and it kills it.
You know what you can do then? Why don't you get some containers, get some rhubarb, plant it, you know, kind of outside in the ground, in the containers, harvest those first stalks when they turn red, and then once the burdock appears and starts to thrive, get it out of the ground, you know, just put it somewhere, maybe give it some chilling inside your house over the winter, and, you know, take it in and out. Some people in your situation will grow it as an annual plant. They'll buy fresh roots every year, put them in the ground in the early spring, harvest it, and then just let it go.
Yes, I've tried that too.
remember that no matter what else, it needs a really rich soil. It needs well-rotted horse manure, lots of compost, no chemical fertilizer whatsoever. That'll make it susceptible to the blight. And it needs really good drainage.
Yep, just like roses.
So if you're giving it good drainage and you're doing everything else and there is some dread disease around, then just take a somewhat artificial root and grow it as a potted plant and everybody will be happier.
Yeah, they go good with strawberries.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, you take care, Sarah.
You too. Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Roland, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for making it, Roland. How are you, sir?
Okay. We're in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. We're a suburb just north of Philadelphia. And we're named after the fort that actually was an encampment by George Washington. And before he went to Valley Forge, he was here and couldn't defend this area, so he moved on to Valley Forge, and Valley Forge is famous, and we're not.
George Washington, like a lot of these other, like, amazing figures in history, like Lincoln, seemed to lose a lot. Is that the secret of being a true American hero, is sometimes you're just too stubborn to give up?
All you need is one more battle won than lost. I guess you're okay.
Roland, what can we do for you?
My wife and I are both have chemistry backgrounds, and we use these independent cylinder type water filters in our for filtering the water in our house. And one day we were discussing whether or not we should use the contents of these water filters for soil, using it in the soil. She's a big gardener, and her idea was, well, these things trap a lot of minerals, so that would be good for the soil. And I thought, well, it's nothing much more than activated charcoal. I can't see how that would be very good. So at the risk of losing marital bliss, we decided to call you and let you make the decision.
So you are against using them because you don't think there's any benefit in activated charcoal, and she wants to use them because she suspects they have trapped precious minerals, and she's going to use them to remineralize the soil.
You've got it.
Now, it's interesting. You're making me think. I have a sediment filter on the water system that comes into my house before I even begin any of the fancy filtering I do. And we are on a well, and we know there's a lot of minerals down in the well. And I'm beginning to think that maybe there's some good minerals that are being trapped there. And I'm wondering if perhaps I shouldn't take that sediment filter and crunch it up and put it into my compost pile, because minerals are one of the things that are decidedly lacking in American soils. J.I. Rodale, for instance, was a real advocate of remineralizing soils to get great yields, and he had great success using a substance he called rock dust. He would just go to quarries where they would sell like driveway stones and stuff, and he would tell them to call him when they got down to the bottom of a batch, and because it would be all this fine dust down there that they actually call fines, quarry fines. And he would load up like a dump truck with this and bring it back and mix it into the soil of his farm. And he got tremendous, tremendous results because plants use up minerals very rapidly, and it's very difficult to get minerals back in the soil. You're on a kind of city water system, right?
Yes.
Which is why you're using the Brita filter. So my concerns and what makes this material useless is the fact that we hope it's taking out the chlorine and some of the fluoride and some of the human pharmaceuticals that survive the water filtration process. So I would think that if your filters are doing their job correctly, when it is time to replace them, the activated charcoal has become contaminated with all those things on the outside of the box that they tell you to use the filters for, like lead, mercury, cadmium. I'm hoping they take out a lot of the chlorine, and some water filtration systems actually use aluminum to settle the water. So I would think all those things would be what your filter would be capturing, and those are all much better tossed away, because that stuff you didn't want to drink, and it's not stuff you wanted for your garden. Now, oddly enough, I'll finish by telling you that Martha Stewart is a huge fan of using pure activated charcoal in her potting soils. She is a fanatic about this. If you're ever in a situation where there's a lot of bulk unused activated charcoal around, Martha would tell you to mix that into your potting soils for your house plants and your outdoor container plants. She's absolutely gaga over it. But what you have in your leftover Brita filters is like contaminated and needs to be tossed away, and you're happy you didn't drink it, so you don't want to reintroduce it into your environment. All right, well, Roland, thanks very much for calling.
And thank you very much for taking my call.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and explain that our last couple of shows didn't make reference to the tree-toppling Superstorm Sandy because we were among the many millions whose trees she toppled and power she outed. And this is the first chance we've had to produce a new show since that devastation. But don't go back to cleaning up your backyard of a million twigs and branches just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow your very own ginger. I'm Ginger Lee Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
Medford Lee's, a not-for-profit community serving those ages 55-plus and guided by Quaker principles, supports WHYY. This fall, there's an opportunity to explore, learn, and discover with Medford Lee's as they launch their new Pathways series. Pathways features public programming on topics covering art, politics, music, history, horticulture, and more. Full details about Medford Lee's public events, educational programming, and its campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, are online at medfordlees.org.
Supporting WHYY, Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages, like their sweet and tart hibiscus cranberry juice. Locations and more at TraderJoe's.com.
We've got sunny skies and 51 degrees in Center City, 51 in Millville, New Jersey as well, and 49 in Little Egg Harbor.
Supporting WHYY, Sleeping Bear Press, publisher of Delia's Dull Day, a new children's picture book. Delia thinks her life is so boring, never realizing that amazing things are happening all around her. Delia's Dull Day.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, want to make your own ginger snaps, ginger ale, ginger-flavored Asian dishes with your very own ginger? There's nothing like that fresh flavor, and you can easily grow and harvest your own tasty rhizomes. We'll tell you how when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, so we're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Patty, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Patty. Where are you?
Wilmington, Delaware.
Very good. What can we do for Patty in Wilmington?
Well, I have a rather new crepe myrtle bush. It's about a year and a half, and it bloomed the first year quite well, and then this summer it grew rather larger than I ever expected. And the branches where the flowers came on, it bent down very, very low. And so I'm wondering, how can I keep it as a bush instead of a tree-looking plant? And when do I prune, and how do I go about pruning it?
And when you bought your crepe myrtle, did you specify that you wanted a multi-trunked specimen, one that could be trained to look like a tree, one that would be shrubby, one that would be dwarfed? Do you remember anything about what you got?
I'll tell you, I had a nursery guy come, and he did some work for me and planted some boxwoods. In addition to that area where he planted that, he put a crepe myrtle. And so he never gave me the details as to what kind it was. But when I look at it, it's one of those multi-trunk kind.
No, actually, you have a plant that's relatively subject to human control and pruning. And it's interesting, you obviously have a plant that, to my mind, was bred to stay fairly compact unless you like the kind of a weeping form when the flowers turn back down towards the ground. I mean, a lot of people like that with ornamental cherries and other plants. But in your case, I'm not sure it was deliberate. I think it might be weeping because it was just top-heavy.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So all crepe myrtles should be pruned in the spring after they begin to grow again. These are somewhat frost-tender plants. As you know, it's only in the last decade or so that you've seen crepe myrtles in the Philadelphia and Wilmington area.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Remember when you had to take the drive down to, like, Virginia Beach or something?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
To see a lot of crepe myrtles? Now they've crept much further north than anyone would expect. So as with figs or any other tender plant like that that's going to stay outside, you never want to remove any of the plant in the fall or even in the winter, because these are plants that come from a warmer climate than we're providing. And in a really cold winter, especially with certain conditions like ice storms, they're going to suffer some winter damage. So it's real easy to have this mental image. If you have a big tree or shrub that you've left alone and winter attacks it and kills the top third, well, you still have a lot of tree and shrub left. But if you hack it back to the ground in fall thinking that was a good idea, and then winter kills the equivalent of that, you've doomed your entire plant because there's nothing left to sacrifice to the gods of winter. So that's why we leave these plants alone now. But then in the spring, as soon as that plant starts to grow again, that's when you figure out what you want to do. And typically the rule with crepe myrtles is every spring you want to prune them back to pretty much the size they were when you bought them, if that was your ideal size. But the idea is typically every spring you remove the previous year's growth. Unless, of course, winter did that for you, and then you just clean up the tips underneath the frost damage. So when you bought it, and or when it was installed, you said it was already blooming.
Yes,
and
it started to bloom, yes.
And you liked that height?
It was. It was just the perfect height.
And the flowers were not being pendulous. They were standing straight up.
No, not the first summer. Not at all. And now they're very, very low. And the flowers, after they're dead, they look like they have little berries in them. Is that what they're supposed to be?
You know, I've never heard that before, but most crepe myrtle flowers are high up enough in the air that we never get to see that. There's no reason to believe that they couldn't form little seed pods. So that would be cool. You might try growing some of those out. I would imagine they might be food for birds. I haven't heard that, but there's no limit to the things I haven't heard. So what I would suggest to you is in the spring, when it starts to grow again, prune it. You know, all things being equal, let's say it just suffers a little winter damage or whatever, prune it back so that the good parts of the plant are about a foot shorter than when it was in bloom for you the first time. and that'll allow it to grow about a foot, put on its flowers, and be at the ideal height for you. And then you should literally repeat that at the same time every spring. There's no reason you can't always keep this plant at the optimum height for you when it blooms.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
And one last thing, one reassuring thing for crepe myrtle owners and fig tree owners, if you have a brutal winter and it looks like the plant is dead, don't assume that. It will probably regrow from the roots. And if that's the case, you suffer really severe winter damage, then just clean off any dead parts. But these trees have a very strong crown. They have a very strong heart, a very strong root system, if you don't mess with them in the fall or the winter.
Very good. I appreciate the information.
All right, Patty, good luck with your crepe myrtle.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alex, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, thank you, Alex. How are you?
I'm fine. How's it going for you?
I am doing very well, sir. Where is Alex Fine?
I'm in Pottstown, PA.
In the shadow of the nuclear clouds.
That's correct.
I have friends who live in Pottstown. I travel through Pottstown all the time. And I tell you, you don't need GPS, right? You
just No. Just look for the towers.
Just look for those twin clouds of steam going up into the air. I always feel a little more carefree when I drive by that.
On your way away from there, right?
Yeah. What can we do for Alex's plants?
Well, I hope that you can help me with this challenge. I have, I think they're called bamboo plants. They're ornamentals. I've seen them in the stores. They sell them different places. They're called good luck plants by some, I believe.
Ah, you mean lucky bamboo.
Yeah.
Okay, because you
That's
see
it.
These... They're sold in, like, little cylinders or little rectangular planting things.
That's right. That's the stuff.
They are not a true bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of a tropical house plant in the genus Dracaena.
Okay.
And they're very easy to care for if you know two or three specific requirements they have.
Okay.
If you don't, they will turn brown and die.
Uh-huh. Well, I've had one that's been limping along fairly satisfactorily for more than 2 years. My son gave it to me as a birthday present, and it seemed to be fine. It's got six or eight different stalks that are intertwined in an attractive pattern, and they're about a foot, a little more than a foot tall. The problem is the end of the leaves keep turning brown, and I'm wondering if I'm overwatering, not watering enough, or if they're not getting the right light. They are getting diffused light.
Okay. And what are you watering with?
I do use mostly water, but during the summer months, I'm in the habit of giving them some grow stuff.
Oh, good Lord. No, you're lucky they're still alive.
Really?
Yeah. These are like the equivalent of air plants, except they're water plants.
Okay.
They actually grow in water.
Okay.
The roots of the plant should always be sitting in a couple inches of water.
Well, then the medium that they're in is fine, then, because it's,
no, it's not.
Some pebbly stuff.
No, it's not.
No, okay.
Because the water you're using is Pottstown water, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. And Pottstown water is no, there's nothing different about Pottstown water than Levittown water or Baltimore water or Chicago water, except that it's chlorinated and fluoridated.
Got it.
And those are toxins to this plant.
Okay.
This plant is relatively bulletproof, but you must buy it distilled water or spring water. Rainwater captured outside would also be fine, but the death of these things is city water. And
okay.
Oddly enough, because it goes against all rules of plants that, you know, we think of instinctually, the less light the better.
Mm-hmm.
Some
okay.
of the healthiest specimens I see are in the middle of dark restaurants.
Well, you're right. I've seen one. I gave one to a friend down in Maryland. She puts it in a bedroom which has a gauzy screen over the window all the time, and that thing's growing like crazy.
Yeah, they are actually negatively affected by light that is too bright.
Okay.
We can only imagine in the tropics, these are deep understory plants.
That's what I was thinking.
That have evolved not to be getting any kind of direct light through the canopy. So make sure it doesn't get too much light. When you get home, take it all apart, pull out all the, pour out all those pebbles and everything. Get like a gallon of spring water or distilled water, and then rinse everything off. Rinse the roots of the plants off. Rinse the pebbles real well. Rinse out the bottom of the container, and then put it all back together and give it the spring water, distilled water, and make sure it doesn't get too much light. And you should do fine. If you want to try to recover those brown tips, miss those a little bit. They might even still green up.
Okay. Wow. That's been enlightening, Mike. You're truly the answer man.
That's why we're here.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Alex.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Robert. How are you, pal?
I am doing great. I am calling from Pittman, New Jersey.
Just south of Philadelphia. So you were not in the hideous swath of the storm.
We, the eye of it came right through our backyard. It was kind of eerie. Never experienced anything like that. Some of my relatives and friends were down at the beach, and they experienced some of the bad part and, you know, kind of picking up the pieces. Pretty scary.
The one last year, the Halloween storm last year, was at my house, much scarier sounding. But this storm seems to have done much more damage.
It's a shame.
All right, what can we do for Robert in New Jersey?
I was calling you regarding my fig tree.
Right.
Not sure of the variety. I received it from an older Italian farmer from Vineland, New Jersey, which is a little bit further south. Grew it from a cutting. And it's probably since 2007 I had it.
Right.
Pruned it a couple of years just to shape it, which maybe was good, maybe wasn't. I left it alone. I talked to a gentleman here at work, an older gentleman. He had thousands of figs, brings in fig jelly and all kinds of things. And he told me, leave it alone. Don't touch it. So I didn't touch it for 2-3 years, and I have no figs. It's really leggy, about 10 feet tall.
Right.
Past winters, it's wrapped by Thanksgiving and unwrapped by Easter. And, you know, frost is always scary to, you know, I watch the weather to make sure it's not too cold in the winter or too hot in the spring when it warms up. So my question is I only had 2 figs this year. I harvested the second fig the other day, and they're small, about the size of a quarter to a half dollar. They're sort of limeish green, and you open them up, and they're brilliant red inside and very sweet.
Oh,
so I had two of them that matured to ripen, but they never fell off the tree. It's starting to lose the leaves now, but just wondering, why did I not have any figs this year? I left it alone like he said. I did what he said.
You're not Italian.
I am Italian.
You are? You're not Italian enough. You got to... You have to channel this. You have to channel this Italian energy into this fig tree.
Quintiliano was the maiden name. It ends with a vowel.
All right. Well, you got to go out and talk to your tree. Tell it it's being a problem, and there are many ways to solve problems.
It's a beautiful tree. You know, I've wrapped it every year, and I guess I'm doing okay that way because it's still alive. It's not dead.
What do you wrap it in?
It's protected on the south side of the house.
Good. By the house?
Right by the house, about 10 feet off it. I usually put pine straw on the bottom, wrap it with burlap, and then I put a couple towels in there, and then wrap it with plastic and then a tarp.
Okay. You're overdoing the wrapping. No more plastic, no more tarps.
Okay.
There's no way you can keep that thing warm unless you put an electric heater in there over the winter. And it doesn't have to stay warm. What we're doing is mostly preventing it from being desiccated from the drying, fierce winds of winter.
Right.
Don't put anything down at the base, other than maybe a light mulch of shredded leaves or compost. What you want to do is you want to protect the plant from winter winds. So it sounds like you're in a good place for figs. It would have been nice had you pruned it this spring. But you didn't do that, clearly. You haven't pruned it for a couple of years.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to wrap what we got because we are expecting a fierce winter. But what I think, what I would prefer you do is get some big stakes, pound them into the ground about a foot away from the plant, and then wrap burlap around the stakes. Make kind of a little room around it, you know, and allow room between the plant and the burlap. All you're doing, literally, it's the old technique of windbreak. And then don't be afraid to unwrap it a little on the early side, because there's a lot to do in the spring. And then after all threat of frost is over, after we're out of that completely, get some pruners and do some trimming of the tree. You know, take off any winter damaged areas and do some light pruning all around. Take out some old woody branches, cut some other branches back. That will stimulate flowering. You really want to help it recover from winter, get rid of any damaged areas, stimulate growth. I predict you're going to have a lot of figs next summer.
More than two?
Yes. Many more.
Great.
All right, man?
Thanks, Mike.
Good luck, Robert.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and mourn the loss of one of my favorite trees, a giant Norway spruce that defined the landscape from my office window, one of the many arboreal casualties of Superstorm Sandy. And I want to warn folks that at least one purveyor of trees, specifically touted as, quote, fast-growing, is offering some really bad replacement choices to shell-shocked homeowners right now. Be aware that fast-growing almost always means short-lived, dangerous, and brittle, and that the best trees are high-quality, slow-to-medium-growing specimens. But don't you go crossing hybrid poplars off your short list just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow your own ginger in a snap. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
52 degrees and sunny skies in Center City, Philadelphia. This is WHYY.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, managing severe orthopedic injury and joint disease. Their team of fellowship-trained and board-certified joint replacement surgeons, rheumatologists, and physical therapists are committed to using an advanced approach to joint care, individualized for each patient. Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, with locations in South Jersey and Newtown Square. More at cooperhealth.org/ortho or 800-8-COOPER.
This is Christopher Kimball from America's Test Kitchen. Next time on our show, the Thanksgiving special. We'll be answering all of your Thanksgiving cooking questions. We'll be tasting turkeys to determine which brand is our favorite. We learn the secrets to the fluffiest mashed potatoes, and we do talk to the man who grew the largest pumpkin in the world. Join us next time for America's Test Kitchen and for our Thanksgiving special from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, an entertaining little ditty on how you can take a chunk of store-bought ginger and use that to grow as many ginger plants and ginger rhizomes, all the ginger you want for years and years to come. It's a simple trick, and we'll learn it to you after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Sherry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Sherry. How are you?
Good.
And where is Sherry Good?
I'm in Kempton, Pennsylvania.
Is that where the mushroom farms are?
No, we're like northwest of Allentown.
Oh, right up in the hills. What can we do for Sherry?
That's my problem. We're on the top of a hill, and during last week's hurricane, we lost a few trees. Now, we have two spruce trees that came down.
Oh, man. That's what I lost. I lost a magnificent Norway spruce that was my favorite companion. That was the tree I saw from my back office. I used to hang suet feeders in it. And I would get visited by, like, five different kind of woodpeckers and chickadees and wrens, and these big raucous blue jays would nest in the tree every year and terrorize my cats. It went down. I had to have it cut up and hauled away, and now there's just this vacuum. And my wife has noticed that this Superstorm Sandy really seemed to have wiped out a lot of Norway spruce.
Yeah, I would say 90% of the trees that I've seen down are some type of spruce. And the other ones that come down are these hybrid poplars.
Oh, well, they're trash. They are absolutely trash trees.
Okay, well, back to my spruce tree. Two of them that came down did not fall all the way down. They just were kind of leaning at about a 45-degree angle.
Right.
And we stood them back up and staked them.
Okay.
What do you think their chances of survival are?
How big were these trees?
They're probably at least 20 foot.
Oh, okay, little babies. Mine was like 60 or 80 feet.
Oh, well, no, those are the two that fell all the way down. They're toast. Okay.
These trees will often reestablish roots, especially if the roots on one side are still intact.
Okay.
You tamped it down good. Now, I am worried about the staking.
Okay.
What exactly did you do?
Well, I don't know. My husband did it, and I haven't looked at it. I know there's rope out there, and I'm assuming it goes around the trunk.
If the tree is stable, you should get rid of any kind of rope or chain or anything cutting into the bark of the tree.
Okay.
There are ways to support trees where you will take a rope and you will cut, say, a watering hose.
Okay.
Completely open and use that to line the rope so that it's just this soft thing holding the tree. But if the tree is standing up and you can remove all this protection and it continues to stand, that's your best bet.
Okay.
The least you have supporting the tree, oddly enough, the better.
Okay.
And anything supporting the tree has to be gentle and soft.
Okay.
You know, for instance, were you to bang a big piece of wood into the ground behind the tree and use it as kind of a prop against the side of the tree that fell? That would be a lot safer than a rope.
Okay.
Or a chain.
Okay.
Because if you accidentally girdle the trunk, if you cut through the trunk in enough of a circle, especially on the living side, the tree will die.
Okay.
Did you feed it? Did you mulch it?
I don't think he did anything to it.
Good. Don't feed it. But don't be afraid to mulch it with some compost to get some natural nutrients in the soil. But make sure the base of the tree is clear, that there's nothing against the trunk.
Okay.
But think of ways to brace it up that don't rope around it.
Okay.
All right, Sharon, I hope yours do better than mine did. It's already part of a floor in a barn somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Chuck, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How are you, sir?
Real good.
And where is Chuck real good?
Well, just north of Bristol, Indiana, in Union, Michigan.
Okay, so you're in the warm. You're in the warmer part of Michigan, right? You're in southern Michigan.
Yeah, south central Michigan there.
And it probably is not nearly as bad as when you get up closer to the lakes, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what can we do for Chuck in Michigan?
Well, I was out raking the fall oak leaves up and took off huge sections of grass at the same time I was raking, and underneath are all sorts of white squiggly things, which I'm assuming are grubs, and I wound up with about an 800-square-foot patch of dirt. After I got all of the grass pulled away that had gone in there. And most of the grub remedies that I've seen, it's always jab put down in the spring. But I just wonder if there's something we can do here in the fall as I go to reseed and hopefully get that section of lawn back going 100% again.
You know, it's very late in the season to be doing this kind of lawn care, even in quote, southern Michigan. This was the kind of stuff you should have been doing in late August, early September. Between the time you're speaking to me now, when did you actually see these live grubs?
About a week ago. Yeah.
You could give it a shot. What you would do is you would get to an independent garden center, and you would immediately put down a substance called milky spore disease.
Okay.
And milky spore is a naturally occurring soil organism. It was found in the part of Japan where these grubs are originally from. And if you put it down while the soil is still warm enough and the grubs are feeding, and they only feed in the fall, the grubs will ingest a spore. That's all it takes is one spore and one grub, and they're dead. But then they become a milky spore factory. So if you have a lot of grubs in your lawn, you put down milky spore, they all eat a little bit of it. They then inoculate your lawn. It's like a polio vaccine.
And
that will survive the winter, survive the summer. People who treat their lawns at the correct time of year will not have lawn grubs again, literally almost forever. There are lawns that were treated four decades ago that are still grub-free.
Okay.
A lot of the milky spore is sold in the spring. It does not work then. The soils tend not to be warm enough, and the grubs aren't feeding. So you've got, like, no time to lose. You need to get that milky spore and get it down immediately. If you miss the window, if the grubs are already going underground to hibernate for the winter, then you wasted your money a little bit, but they will not cause any more harm in the grub stage. They will go down below the frost line, which where you are, I believe, is about 30 feet below.
Yeah.
And then in the spring, they'll come back up and they'll push through the soil as adult beetles, either Japanese beetles or June beetles or Rose Chafer beetles. And then those beetles will mate and lay new eggs in your lawn. To prevent the laying of eggs that turn into grubs, you have to keep your lawn at least 3 inches high and try and keep it dry. If you water your lawn in the summer, you should only water deeply once a week. Imagine being a pregnant female Japanese beetle who only lay their eggs in turf grass. You're looking for grass that's been scalped and is soaking wet.
Okay.
Because that makes the ideal nursery. So the higher your cut and the drier your lawn, the more naturally grubs won't be attracted to it.
Okay.
Now,
we will give that a shot here this week yet. I'll find my way to the local farmer's store that I'm sure carries that milky spore and go from there.
Make sure you call around and you got a store that has it.
Okay.
Because, you really got to get that down. And then if you really are going to reseed, do it at the same time.
Okay.
Put down the milky spore. Then have a big load of topsoil delivered. Spread that over top of the milky spore. That'll help keep the soil warm. That'll keep the grubs up close to the surface where they can be exposed to that. And then sow your seed in that. But, it's starting to get cool for the seed to germinate.
Okay.
So make sure there's a good amount of perennial rye in the mixture that you buy because that can germinate at the coldest temperatures.
Okay, perennial rye. We'll do that then.
And next year when the leaves come down, it's always better to either use a mulching mower to shred the leaves directly into your lawn to feed it, or use a yard vac, a leaf blower set on vacuum to suck the leaves up. Because if you're like us, your lawn has been constantly wet the last couple of months. And anytime you rake a wet lawn, you're going to be pulling up lots of grass.
Right. Okay.
And if the problem, if you're checking and your grass is turning brown in clumps and you see grubs next fall, get it down anytime in September and guaranteed that's it. That'll be the last time you have to do it.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. And then thank you for taking my call and look forward to being grub free.
There you go. Very good, Chuckster. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. grow your own ginger. Larry Roebling, producer of You Bet Your Garden for the next couple of weeks, please read this week's opening question.
Of course, Mike. Deborah in Oaks, Pennsylvania writes, a couple of weeks ago, Mike mentioned that you could take a piece of ginger from the market, stick it in the dirt, and it would grow. I tried this, but have had no luck. Am I overlooking something? We also heard from Lori in Princeton, New Jersey. I have always wanted to grow my own ginger. I have an old root that is sending out a shoot. Is this something I can plant and grow in a pot indoors over the winter?
Well, several years ago, I was helping a friend move his tender plants inside before frost hit. One was in a pot that was badly split apart, and the simple green leaves and shoots looked pretty ordinary. So I asked him, one, do we really want to keep this? And two, should we repot it? Instead of answering, he just banged the contents loose on his big outdoor potting bench. Out came an almost impossibly small amount of soil, and two or three huge, dark, irregularly shaped clumps that, when rinsed off, showed themselves to be the same ginger roots, they're actually rhizomes, I was buying in Asian grocery stores in Philadelphia's Chinatown. He said, looks like it got a little root bound, and gave me the biggest clump. Then he showed me the little bud eyes, the sprouts-to-be on some of the fingers of the clump. Break off a piece that has one of these little buds, he instructed. Plant it and use the rest. That little piece will grow you a new plant that you can harvest in about a year. Or just let it grow for a few years and you'll get bigger clumps. Just make sure it's the last plant you take outside in the spring and the first one you bring inside in the fall. Ginger is really tropical and doesn't like any kind of chill. Now, that was about 8 years ago, and despite my overwatering, underwatering, and benign neglect in general, I still have a direct descendant of that original clump. Ginger just loves to grow. So get a nice, fresh piece of ginger from the market. Make sure it's plump and moist and has a couple of those bud eyes visible, not a dried and leathery chunk that's been sitting around too long. A lot of sources suggest soaking the rhizome in water for a day before planting, and that seems like a good idea. Then find a pot that provides excellent drainage and lots of room for the underground ginger to grow, and fill it about three-quarters of the way with a combination of the loosest, lightest potting soil you can find and high-quality compost or worm castings. Make it about a 50-50 mix. Ginger grows best in a naturally rich soil that drains exceptionally well. Then break off a chunk of rhizome and place it on top of the soil mixture with the bud eye, or the already out green sprout, facing upwards, and gently fill the pot the rest of the way with your mix. Then sit the pot in a few inches of water for an hour or so to let the soil get completely saturated. Then let it drain and place the pot in a warm spot in your house, around 75 degrees Fahrenheit would be ideal. Don't water it again until the pot feels light, and even then have a light hand with the water. When the first green shoots appear, move the plant into bright light and make sure the area stays warm at night. Mist the green shoots daily and continue to water whenever the pot begins to feel light. Take it outside in the spring, about 2 weeks after your nights start staying in the mid-50s or above. Don't rush. And make sure it sits on a surface that allows good drainage. At the end of the season, the green growth may die back. Don't panic. That just means it's time to harvest. Take some of the rhizome to use in the kitchen and replant the rest. If it doesn't die back and you want to see what you got, empty the pot out about 11 months after you started the plant. If it's too tiny to harvest, repot it and grow it out for another year.
Well, Mike, we also heard from Amanda in Duluth, Minnesota. She writes, I have a tropical ginger plant in a pot in my house next to a window that faces southeast. No matter what I do, the leaf tips are singed. I water it almost every day, as I have read that it likes its soil wet. When I have not watered it this often, whole stalks die. So I kept up the watering, but the leaf tips remained crispy.
Well, Amanda doesn't say if she has edible ginger or one of its ornamental flowering cousins, but no plant should need to be watered every day, especially in the wintertime. you might want to increase the humidity in that house. I suspect that sweater-wearing people can shuffle their feet and then shoot electrical charges at you like a comic book supervillain from November through March. Whatever else you do, begin daily misting of the leaves. Tropical plants tend to love high humidity at their leaf tips. Well, that sure was some interesting information about growing your own ginger snap supplies now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over at your leisure and follow the links to obtain even more information. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to plant me in a pot if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Like us on Facebook. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. Like us on Facebook. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and or like us on Facebook already. Aye! Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv, Griffin. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Loquacious Larry Roebling returns as our producer, while the amiable Alexis Landis, who normally produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, is on maternity leave. Anxiously on maternity watch are our production assistants Joanna Hatzis and Brett Rader, social media director Amanda McGrath, and esteemed editor Al Banks. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I promise not to make the baby cry, okay? But I can't promise the same for the rest of yous when I see you again next week. Got weeds? Get goats. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how goats are one of our best weapons in the war against invasive weeds. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Whether it's goats, gooseberries, gladioli, or gloxinia, Mike's got the great advice on his Gab Fest to ensure a gorgeous garden. Join us Saturday mornings at 11 for You Bet Your Garden here on WH.